SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201. Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. As I tie my left shoe, I had a busy morning trying to finalize this pick six, and there's time, obviously, today for this Churchill $385,000 carryover. And I got so caught up. And then, of course, there was action to follow at Churchill this morning, which we'll talk about in a minute, and we will hear from Marty McGee in the next 10 minutes from the backside. I was going to wait. I was going to take a shower after the show, which I sometimes do. But there were so many fabulous videos and photos of bathing horses. The Monomoy Girl bath, the Justify bath. I said, I got the fever and I jumped in the shower. I just sat down a minute before post here. Sometimes that. Usually I, about 8 o'clock. Usually I'll take care of that, but I got caught up in this pick six, and it's going to be fun. And I'm anxious. We're going to try to catch with Seth Merrill. Maybe Seth's got some ideas. I'll ask Marty in a few minutes if he's got any final thoughts. I mean, his regular analysis is, or his selections, he is Hermes in the selection grid at DRF. But to see if Marty's got any other ideas. There's a few interesting horses, not the least of which is in that first race, Brendan Walsh. And I didn't get a chance the other day to bring this up with Brendan, but he's got a horse that he owns, Walsh Racing, Boyd Crowder. I think I just mentioned this in passing yesterday, a Not for Love colt. And a Pennsylvania bred. And it's doing a bunch of things that I love. The triple whammy, as you've heard me refer to it. Dropping down, cutting back, turf to dirt. Plus he's putting blinkers on. And Brendan Walsh reaches for Corey Lannery, with whom he has some gaudy statistics. Positive ROI and close to a 40% win tick. Boyd Crowder in that fourth, but there's another at least three horses that we're going to use. And, the 20-cent increment, which when it comes to these pick sixes, when it comes to that approach, I think it impacts your handicapping. Not negatively in terms of picking horses or using your own handicapping toolbox, but in terms of your mental attitude and going into them, I would recommend discerning, your A, B's, and C's and your throwouts. I would really suggest you approach it as if it's a $2 pick six, and that. That you don't want to run the budget, you don't want to test the budget constraints. Do that. Go into it like it's a pick six for $2. And pick your horses that you would use if it was a $2 pick six. Add the totals up and recognize at that point that it's 20 cents. And then go back and add the horses that were bothering you. But if you, I think the tendency, And I the Rainbow Six thing, the Jackpot Sixes, I only play when they reach critical mass, or when they're being forced out. So I'm not necessarily the authority on building these 20-cent tickets, but I just think if you approach it as if you don't have a free hand in terms of your budget, I think you're better off. I think it makes you more more potentially accurate. You don't, if you go in thinking, well, I can afford four horses here. Oh, this is a race I can do. If you do that, I think the acuity, you go into it with too much of a scattershot mentality. So budget yourself mentally as if you're going to be testing your budget as if it's a $2 play. That's what I've been doing with this. And when I look at these, then go back and say, okay, all right, so I can afford two more horses in this leg and two more horses in that leg, and go in trying to find a single in the sequence. And if you do find, if you have that confidence, well, then you're that much better off, obviously. If you go in and say, wow, this is a single, this horse, I could single this horse. If it was a $2 ticket, I would single here. All right. Then now you've really helped yourself. So that's just a little rumination on the 20-cent pick six today. The Saturday cards came together. If you haven't seen what's going on in New York on Saturday, as Andy discussed yesterday, really fun card. The Man of War, they're calling it the Man of War Festival. And there'll be television on Saturday emanating from Belmont Park. The Vagrancy, which has just six, but a bunch of winners. I mean, the horses that pretty rare that you see horses with this kind of percentage. Sounds Delicious, 5 of 6 from Linda Rice. Wesley Ward, Kirby's Penny, 6 of 11. Chalon from Arnaud Delacour, 4 for 9. Ascertain, Pletcher, 3 for 8. Ron Moquette's Swing and Sway, 5 for 15. And Holiday Disguise, 5 for 7. A serious bunch. And then you get into some of the turf action. I think the weather, from what we can tell, the weather will not impact. Turf should be absolutely glorious. You look at, they got the Run Happy, the Sprint, which group of six in here as well, and lots of winners there. Then the Bogey, the Mile and a 16th for the fillies and mares. Peter Pan. And the Peter Pan got interesting because unexpectedly to some degree, you saw the report from Dave Grenig, Diamond King from John Service and Chuck Zachney, the Cash is King team, Len Green, and the DJ stable people. Diamond King, who has got the free pass into the Preakness, but may very well run in the Peter Pan. So we'll wait for that decision. Group of eight, including Peter Urton with Core Beliefs, who looks very tough in here, coming out of the excellent third in the Santa Anita Derby, where he was hustled to run and then proceeded to get a grade one placing and the recognition that this is a real horse. So the Quality Road Colt drew the rail. That's the one tricky part of this, but Tyler Bays comes to town. Chance to ride in New York. Zing Zang showed up in here. Steve Asmussen, the deep, deep, deep closer. He's going to add blinkers finally and see if that doesn't get him more involved. Just Whistle, Michael Matz, off the maiden breaker at Keeneland. Blended Citizen, of course, that was on the outside looking in, left in the barn on Derby Day out of the Bluegrass, where he was actually closing quite nicely. A solid horse. He is going to get an acid test on dirt at Belmont. This is a little different, getting over Belmont as opposed to Churchill. This was a horse that, had he run at Churchill, you know, we've talked so much about the clay composition at Churchill Downs over the years and how if turf horses are going to have a decent run on dirt, it will be at Churchill because of the clay content. Diamond King, as mentioned. Castellano would ride if they choose to run here. High North. He comes back to New York for Brad Cox. John Ed Anthony, the Midnight Loot, coming off the excellent performance, that absolute dynamite Northern Spur, where he and Ike were tooth and nail before High North put him away late. But he's kept good company, and this was a horse that was supposed to step forward. It was out of that Super Key Kentucky Jockey Club, then started the year in the Risen Star and was okay, split the field there, went to the Rebel, and you know had a bit of a bit of a look and a whisper to him, and then he got some class relief, as we discussed with Brad, winning the Northern Spur. So High North trying to wade back into the deep end using the Peter Pan. Gotta Go turned up in here for Ian Wilkes and the Lothenbach team. He puts blinkers on as well. And Transistor, a horse that's come up, Arindel. This is a South Florida horse that Stanley Gold trains, and Rudy will send out. Shipped up. It looks like he shipped up about a week ago. And Transistor drew the outside. Testing some deeper waters. 1-for-50 at Gulfstream in February, and then has been okay in some of those restricted type opportunities at Gulfstream since then. Low 80 buyer type, but he could step forward. And out of a Running Stag mare, how great is that? Running Stag, who one time in the Saratoga office, the Saratoga Stakes Barn, I was wearing a blue blazer with silver, with gold buttons, and he was watching my arm move, and he took a hold of the buttons, Running Stag, and would not let them go. I mean, I don't remember if I had to take the jacket off to get it back from him. that's my Running Stag. I always love seeing his name. I'll never forget that. I couldn't get him. He's looking at me in the eye. Marty McGee is supposed to join us first before we go to the break. So no break yet. You can get Marty now, and we'll talk to him about Justify's work. So there's your Peter Pan, and then the Man of War, the Mile and Three-Eighths, and all the usual suspects were rounded up for this. Sadler's Joy, Wake Forest. Chad Brown only has, I think, three. Money Multiplier is back from his exciting trip to... Where did he go? Did he go? Not Dubai. He went to Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia, or Qatar? Points, all points on the compass. Scooter Dickey shows up with One Go, All Go, the absolutely wonderful winner of the Elkhorn. And obviously we know where to look for him. High Happy as well in here out of the Pan Am win. This is a nice field. Really nice group. Scholar Athlete, who feels like he's been around for 10 years, but is just a five-year-old, the Einstein. Gelding for West Point, and Graham Motion, Postulation, Eddie Graham. Tuned up for this at Aqueduct a couple of weeks ago in an allowance. So there's your terrific Belmont action on Saturday, the Man of War Festival. And it's been a festival, or a three-ring circus, maybe a better description, over at Churchill as we waited for Justify to get back to the track. Marty McGee joins us, and Marty, back on the backside. Churchill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve Bick. What's going on?
Well, had to check in with you because of all the concern and all the carrying on regarding Justify and the left hind, and he returned to the track today. You talked to Elliot Walden. We talked to him yesterday. Elliot on hand for the gallop. Some on-the-spot reporting, if you will.
Well, my lead for the – I'm riding for the Saturday DRF, the Preakness doings. My lead is everybody can calm down now. Because the horse looked great. He went a mile and a half. No incidents, no signs, no nothing. You know, Elliot and I'm sure Jimmy Barnes, who I did not have the opportunity to talk to, I'm sure were very relieved and happy that it all played out like this, that they evidently have dodged a bullet. You know, they might have missed one day of training, but who cares? You know, he's the horse looked great. He came out. I stood at right inside the 6 furlong pole there on the backside gap. With, there were maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40 media people there, some with cameras, some without, you know, just documenting how the horse was going to do. And he did superb. He came out at 7:31. He was the first one on the racetrack, backed up to the wire, came around, first one around. Came around again, stopped at about the, you know, 5/8 pole or so. And very routine, which is very good news for them.
And one of the things that was as important as him returning to the track, actually with all the video that was sent out, and you had some of it, in fact, of him coming off the track, you don't have to necessarily worry about what's going on when they're on the racetrack and when they're walking the shed row with the sawdust and with the, you know, the nicely groomed soft surface. It's on the hard ground that you watch even more carefully. And I thought that part of it was, you know, was very routine, the way he moved on the pavement, because that's where, if there's going to be a, you know, something to worry about, it'll manifest itself there.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't going to jog him in front of
right.
Everybody. By the way, they do a lot of horses. But, you know, everybody was looking at that left hind. And as I said, as to my untrained eye, I couldn't spot anything. But, you know, Chris Hartman happened to be watching him with me. And he says, man, he's good. Yeah, everybody saw the video from Sunday after the fact. And, so, yeah, again, it looks like it's onward and upward toward Pimlico. He will, Elliot confirmed afterward, well, today's Thursday. The plane leaves next Wednesday. I had that in my story that's in the Friday editions of DRF. As far as the scheduling goes for the transportation, there's just going to be one plane that comes, that originates in Southern California, comes here next Wednesday, lands around 11, leaves here around 12. I'm talking about Wednesday, May 16th, and goes to BWI and supposed to land there a little bit before 2, I guess, and which is pretty normal what they do every year. Sometimes there's two plane loads. Greg Otteson with Tech Sutton told me there's just one. So some of the guys, there's so many horses coming from here. Like Steve Asmussen told me this morning, sending 10 over to Pimlico, and so I think he's going to van his in two different loads. But anyway. Justify is going to be on that. So from backing up from today being Thursday, he will gallop. He won't breeze, of course. He'll gallop Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I assume Wednesday before they ship. So he'll get plenty of, you know, they'll maintain the fitness and just do what they got to do to get him over there in the best shape they can.
Well, just noting a picture that Tom Amos put up about half an hour ago, and Amos also, you're talking about the horseman's observations, and Amos said looked exactly the same today as he looked training before the Derby, and he actually got a look. Jenny Reese had mentioned to me that she had been on hand when
when Jimmy Barnes was working with the farrier back on Monday, it would have been. And there's a picture of a three-quarter shoe that obviously is there to help, and Amos says this, protect the inside quarter. And certainly this is something that Baffert and Barnes and the team have dealt with before, considering, you know, the fact that American Pharoah, you know, dealt with a specialty shoe as well for an extended period. So all systems go. We can also add another report from your colleague, Dave Grenick. And Dave says that John Service has decided he will scratch from the Peter Pan to run in the Preakness. So there's another confirmed starter, and we'll see if Amos's interest in the Preakness has changed, Marty, because he had made the decision with Lone Sailor based on, you know, the flare that went up with the Justify foot issue. So we'll see if Lone Sailor perseveres to Baltimore.
Absolutely. And then I saw on Twitter last night that Mick Ruiz has reversed course, having completely ruled out the Preakness and opened the door a little bit. And with Boldoro, he's over at Keeneland. Evidently he's training out two or three mornings, and we'll see how that plays out. So really, the big decision is coming from my man grinning up in New York with Chad. I mean, the good magic thing I'm going to end up writing today about Keith Fustel, the linemaker Pimlico, talking about, you know, if good magic goes in, then maybe, yeah, justifies 3-5 in the race. If he doesn't go in, you know, he's 20 or 30 cents on the dollar.
Well, you would think. It seems to me likely that good magic, knowing that Chad Brown has already said that his other, you know, the other goals for the E5 Stone Street Colt is in the summer, you would think they run. I mean, they're not running in New York for Belmont. So if he's doing okay, you got to think he runs. You mentioned Boldoro. Shelby Ruiz is with him at Keeneland. We now know Diamond King is a go. Give me a minute from Dallas Stewart and Quip and Tenfold. So right now we're looking at about 8, maybe 9 horses when they take entries next week.
And the two Lucases.
Yeah.
And you know, Dallas told me yesterday 50-50. I think he was, forgive me a minute, I think he'd rather run him in the Woody Stevens, cutting back a little bit than go up here. But I think that might have been one of the contingency things toward, you know, with the whole Justified deal.
Well, we will keep watching. And, Marty, I'm working on my final decisions toward the pick six today. And we talked about it the other morning. Was that yesterday? I've lost track. any further decision making that on your part?
I haven't looked at it any further, Vic, but I will. Once I get done with all my work this morning, that's next on my list to try and pare down something and give myself a chance to hit a lick.
Absolutely. 5:58 Eastern time is the start of the pick six sequence. And of course, Marty, it's also a very important day around the McGee household, seeing as how it's Samantha Siegel's birthday, and the entire industry stops to wish Sam a happy birthday.
She's 39 again. Happy birthday, Sammy Joe.
I love it. And, of course, we had some fun this morning. I alerted everybody. May 10th, 1913, 105 years ago today, Donerail, the winner of the Kentucky Derby, the longest shot ever in the history of the Derby. And we thank Marty, and we bring it up with Marty because Donerail was by McGee.
By McGee. He paid us,
I love it.
91-1, Roscoe Goose.
Well, and speaking of Roscoe Goose, who went on to become an absolute legend in Kentucky, did just about everything you could do and was a mentor to Eddie Arcaro, among other riders, and, you know, trained a little and was a racing official. And he has a house, the family house, right I think on either third or fourth. And Dick Downey, his nephews are own the house now, and were living there. And Dick was, that's where he spent the lead up to Derby.
Does it have a historical marker there?
It does. It does.
Wow.
Yeah.
Neat.
His, I guess his nephew, his nephews bought the house when the family, the Goose family, sold it, and Goose lived there until his death in, I think, 1971. Pretty cool. So,
awesome.
Little tidbit, and I'll give you one more, Marty, and this is one that is a bit of an obscurity. Douglas Park. The track that was over by the airport.
Okay.
And Douglas Park, which was raised in 1959 when Marty and I were born, and Donorail was stabled at Douglas Park and had to, you know, people carry on about the walk over now from the backside. They had to walk over 3 miles.
No
How's
idea.
That for a walk over? Dodging streetcars with Donorail.
I live right off the Waterson at Westport Road, and just inside the Waterson is a historical marker of a track back in the, had to be the 1850s or so, called Woodlawn. And yeah, I need to be more like you, Vic, and kind of brush up on that history.
Well, you know, what else do I have to do? I find except dig this stuff up. Marty, I appreciate it.
Clem Florio would have called you a shut-in. With stuff like that, he goes, "You're just a shut-in."
I love
see
it.
See you later, Vic.
See you, Marty. Marty thanks. McGee. That's funny. That is funny. Clem Florio, who was, when we get to Baltimore, we'll get, you know what, we'll let Andy Beyer regale you with the Clem Florio tales. How about that? Boy, our boy, Chet Hancock. Chet loved Clem Florio. That was one of his buddies as well. A legend of the... Of all the classic sports writing topics, horse racing and boxing, right? Well, that was baseball, college football, boxing, racing. You know, Donorail, 91-1, and he wasn't the longest shot on the board. There was a horse that was 180-1 in that race. So there you go. I'm sure everybody expects or thinks that it must have been the longest shot. No. Lord Marshall was 183-1. And, you know, not only did Donorail win at 91-1, but Gowell was third at 87-1. Now, of course, this is the pre-exotic era. But what kind of triple would that have been? The favorite, you know, the horse that never gets mentioned, I suppose, is 10 Point, who was the favorite at 6-5. And, you know, there was a Burrell ancestor rode Jimmy Gill, who was 7th at 36-1. How about that? Let's take a break. We've got some Hong Kong. We've got sad news from New England as well. Lou Ruffetto is going to join us. Charlie Asimakopoulos passed away a few days ago, and Lou will tell you about him. One of those names that for those of us at Saratoga used to look for Asimakopoulos. They'd come in from Rockingham, the Rockingham Shippers, Mikey Arrow, and it's kind of sad. One of the great names from New England racing. Later, Tony Black, Steve Haskin, Tom Quigley, Seth Merrill, Rich Ang, a lot to do. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey folks, Eddie Olczyk here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Marilyn for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live like a good boy ought to. And your mama takes a shine to put their son. Something different. All the girls are seeming to like you. Cause you're handsome, like the dog.
Scissor Sisters, so great. Pat Cummings joining us, and Pat, I don't know what to tell you. Between Thundersnow and Mendelsohn, it's getting a little silly. Good morning.
Yes, I agree. Although I will, I'll say this much: Mendelsohn got a little farther than Thundersnow did. But I won't say that Ryan gave him the full mile and a quarter ride. He had him wrapped up pretty early, and some fantastic pictures, I'd say, at least, came out of Mendelsohn's Kentucky Derby debacle. But I will say this. I listened back to the show from last Thursday and was at least heartened that my at least suggested bet structure would have yielded a $19,000 superfecta. So I felt good about that. And to be fair, the my overall assessment, which I think wasn't crazy, was just that it felt like the top part of the crop in this field was very good, and that I had a hard time thinking that, you know, those top six horses weren't going to run, that at least three of them were going to be right in the mix, and it is how it played out. And Instilled Regard was one of those that I threw in there at a big price, and anyway, he ran a big race, and I'd say it was a very satisfying Derby where you had three horses nearest at the finish that all ran three very different races, but all three very good races. And as impressive as Justify was, I thought the runs from Good Magic and Audible were, to a different degree, very impressive as well. And it felt a pretty satisfying Derby overall, in the sense that the cream really rose to the top. I don't think that we got anywhere close to seeing what Mendelsohn could do on that surface, and it was just really a rugged first eighth of a mile for him, and I'd say after that it was pretty much over. And I think there may have been a couple other horses that endured such a trip. If you haven't seen them, and you may have talked about it, Steve, I could have missed it. I really liked the tweets that Marshall Graham put out on Twitter at Truxton Stables.
Right, the betting
of ten,
the dollars and cents. Yeah, that was fascinating.
The imputed odds based on he did it both from what the double pools were, the Oaks Derby double, so the imputed odds, the early imputed win odds of how people were treating all of the Derby horses in the Oaks Derby double relative to what they ended up on the win odds. And then he also did it from the exacta pools. I think based on the action these horses had in the exacta, how were horses being treated in the win pools versus the exacta. And it's pretty fascinating to see some of the differences, of what he put. So I highly recommend people go and check that out. And interestingly, you know, that, for example, in the exacta pool based on the action Mendelsohn took, had him 6.7 to 1, whereas he jumped 6.8 to 1. Justify 2.8 to 1 on the exacta, 2.9 to 1 on the win line. But there were certainly there were some underlays. Audible was being treated as basically an 11 to 2 shot in the exacta pool, where he was 7 to 1 on the win line, and a horse like Instilled Regard, who jumped at 85 to 1 on the win line. And this just goes to a point that we've talked about many times before, that in the Kentucky Derby, even if you have a long priced horse to win, they typically are much longer in the exotics. And Still Regard was playing like 164 to 1 chance in the exacta pools. Combatant was playing 123. Bravazo 122 to 1, based on the action they were taking in those in the exacta pool, which was all of them were considerably higher than what their actual win prices were. So check those out if you haven't. I thought that was a good way to look at the race, and it just felt like a satisfying Kentucky Derby despite the horrendous weather.
No, exactly, and that you end up with, despite the circumstances, that you end up with a four pool result, it has a certain level of I don't know, just not everybody is thrilled that we've had six straight favorites win, but under that circumstance, you also don't want some completely, not to take away from Mind That Bird, but you, Andy, in fact, yesterday, I'm losing track of days, Tuesday, Andy said there's a certain harmony when the horse that was perceived to be the best coming in is your winner and runs the kind of race that he ran. I mean, that's another part of this, yep, that should be included in the
scheme of things. For him to run a pressing pace race and good magic too, right? You know, chasing behind. And for them to run the way they did and finish 1-2, where the rest of the chart is just in complete collapse, that's a glowing testimony to the quality of the performances.
I love a good hard on your sleeve sort of performance, and it was deserving of that relative to the six favorites. And you may have referenced this, but Marshall also put out a great stat: the probability of no favorite winning the Derby from 1980 to 1999 was about 435-1, 0.229%. But the probability of the last six favorites winning the Derby,
right,
was 20,000-1.
Yep.
So less than a 1% chance of six consecutive favorites. It's really interesting to see how it comes, and it has gone. And I mean, I remember when Fusaichi Pegasus kind of broke the favorite duck. It was becoming a line like the Apollo line, really. The favorite simply can't win the Kentucky Derby. But now they've got on a good run, and frankly, and despite quite a number of years here where there's been significant rain, three of those six, I think, have been running off track. So, and very off track. They weren't just slightly wet; they were very sloppy track. So, it was a lot of fun to watch, even from afar.
You had a little viewing party.
I woke up at 6:30 and opened up the computer, found my access, and I was back in bed for another hour or two to get up before heading off to racing, because it had been a long night before. I had been on the simulcast coverage here. We had the 2000 Guineas coverage and a couple of Group 1s from South Africa. So I was on TV till about 1 in the morning here in Hong Kong, got home, took a couple hours of sleep, got up, watched the Derby, went back to sleep for an hour or two, and then got up for our 11-race card on Sunday, which was a very, very good card at that. So busy times.
I'll dive in, actually. Let's get a review of the action, of course, from Sha Tin, going back to the weekend and even yesterday.
Yeah.
Happy Valley.
Well, first race, I mentioned it very quickly last week, the first race with the Griffins, the new horses into Hong Kong and Styling City, Joe Moreira, John Moore, went out there and did it again in a very impressive effort. So he's now 2 from 2. He jumped as the shortest priced favorite. He was 1-10. He's actually 15-100. Very short, Styling City. And he won by 2.5, but the difference here is that he was pressed in this particular race by the horse that ends up second, Quadruple Double. He didn't have things his own way. He was really pressed early, and he still pulled away late. So it's a very good and progressive effort from Styling City, and could be a horse to really keep an eye on going forward for a very likable connections. The winning train, or rather the winning owner, Gary Ling, was the winning owner of the Dubai Golden Shaheen the last year when they had the Tapita in with Sterling City. So he has Styling City now. The Queen Mother Memorial Cup, Steve, over the mile and a half, the prep here for the Champions and Chater Cup that's upcoming on May 27th. And they went the mile and a half in 2:25 and 4, Exultant, winning for Tony Cruz and Zach Purton. Horse that went all through the four-year-old classic series, but Purton sensed a fairly slow pace down the backstretch and took the race by the scruff of the neck. He made a big middle move, went from basically near last to first down the backstretch, and then just opened up, and he actually won by 6 lengths over the mile-and-a-half trip. Prawn Baba and Doyenne rounded out. Eagle Way, who was backing up after 1 week, having run third in the Queen Elizabeth II Cup, the Group 1, he could only run fourth, beating 11 lengths. Exultant just absolutely spread them out, and he will now go on to that Group 1 with his stable companion, Pakistan Star. The crazy horse, Savvy Six, that had been on my radar. I mean, he's still crazy, but there is some video out there on the internet and on Twitter if you can sort it out. But Savvy Six went onto the track and planted himself and just absolutely refused to go anywhere. And he realized, if this guy here is tugging on the strap, if I just duck my head a little bit like this, I can probably throw this bridle. And sure enough, that's what he did, threw the bridle and ran off bridleless around shot 10 with Keith Young still in the plate. But everyone emerged unscathed, and Savvy Six didn't take part. A horse I previewed last week as well, Montreal, ran fourth, beaten 2.5 in his Hong Kong debut. That was a very good effort. He was 6-1, Steve, and that's a lot of action for a horse that had only had one barrier trial. Granted, it was a very impressive barrier trial, but a lot of action to take in Hong Kong, and to have only been beaten that way. I think Montreal is a horse that has nothing but group-level races painted all over him for the future. He'll get there. It'll take him a little while to get there, but really a very good effort. We ran at Happy Valley last night, an 8-race card. Nothing too dramatic in terms of the form through the night, but kind of the story that's really developing now in Hong Kong. There's just 18 meetings left in the season, and it's the race between Zach Purton and Joe Marrera, which no one thought it'd be close, but it is far closer this late in the season. Marrera's on 105 wins, Purton 97. It's a gap of 8. Purton actually has 16 more seconds from, about 30 rides fewer than Marrera. So it's an eight win margin between them, and is certainly getting plenty of attention here amongst our media. And we'll continue to do. Both riders need to stay out of suspensions and whatnot, which the minimum suspension is pretty much going to see out for a week, 2 meetings. So if they can stay out of the stewards' room, it'll be an absolute dogfight to finish it. That's what we're expecting. Now, we'll race on Saturday this week, so late Friday evening for those night owls, and a 10-race card. All of the races are focused on the relationship between Hong Kong and Macau, the other special administrative region across the harbor here, part of the Pearl River Delta, and a 10-race card, which is headlined by the second leg of the Interport Series between Hong Kong and Macau. This is the Hong Kong leg of the Hong Kong-Macau Trophy. This is a Class 1 handicap. It'll go 1,400 meters. It's race 8 on Saturday at Sha Tin. A full field of 14 will go. 4 horses have come in from Macau. They're all well down the bottom of the weights, and I don't really think any of them will factor into the frame. But it's a very competitive Hong Kong handicap otherwise with the 10 Hong Kong runners that are in here. Romantic Touch is eligible for $1 million Hong Kong dollar bonus if he can win. He actually won over in Macau, the Macau leg of this race, and if he can pull this off, he'd pull down an extra $125,000 or so. He's drawn in 13, though, for Douglas White. A horse that we follow through the 4-year-old series is in here, Steve. That's the Golden Age, who has another one of those horses that just goes out there up front and just tries to knock them silly on the front end. And I love those types. He's cutting back here from the Hong Kong Derby into the 1,400 meters, which is the shortest trip he's faced all season. It's going to feel like he might be running a little farther, though, because he's been drawn out in the car park. He's out in gate 14. So the Golden Age is going to try and go forward and last. There's really only one other speed presence in the race. He'll carry 126 pounds, which is the co-third high weight in this field. Eyes for me, though, down to the bottom of the weights and number 12 Calculation. Karis Teton riding for our leading trainer, John Size, who's on the verge of his 10th consecutive trainer's championship. 3 consecutive second placings, but all three, rather 2 of the 3 were on dirt. One of those seconds was in a Class 2 handicap where he carried 120 pounds over this same course and distance, where a horse who he will face in this race, his stable companion, What Else But You, he He's going to carry 126 pounds, what else but you, but calculation, making the step up into Class 1 for the first time, he's only going to carry 113. So these two, in their last turf effort, were separated by 2.25 lengths. Calculations run very well since then. He was also a 4.5 length winner over the extended mile trip on the dirt prior to that. Very well raced this season, Steve. He's had 15 starts this season. So this will be start number 16 for calculation. And he only has one win to his credit this season, but there could be another one in the offing over this trip. 1,400 meters, well drawn and very well handicapped. So I like calculation number 12 in the eighth race, the Hong Kong Macau Trophy. And I have to mention, we have a dirt race on Saturday, the sixth race. This is the Taipa Handicap. 6 furlongs on the dirt, a Class 3 handicap. And in here we have the Hong Kong Dirt debut for number 3, Cheerful Jets. Now, Cheerful Jets won 3 times this year on the grass, all of them on the front end. Really does like to go forward. But first time getting onto the dirt surface. Cheerful Jet is out of a damning Bright Abyss. And Alan Carrasso from the TDN found the video. Andrew Hawkins actually uncovered this and was chatting about it on Twitter. Alan Carrasso found the video, and sure enough, I actually called Bright Abyss in races back when it was Philadelphia Park, I think about 2008. And there is video out there. I'll try and find the tweet and put it back up of me calling Bright Abyss. But there is dirt pedigree there on Cheerful Jet. I don't think he was going to be a big price anyway, but Cheerful Jet makes a dirt debut in the Taipa Handicap Race 6. The pedigree is certainly there. He's by Darcy Brahma, but he'll get on dirt for the first time. And a fun day, Saturday racing at Sha Tin. And, Steve, I won't be with you next week. We'll have Andrew Hawkins in the driver's seat because I will be in Seoul for the 37th Asian Racing Conference, which is really one of the it's about every 2 years or so. Last one was in Mumbai, India, and let's just suffice to say I prefer being in Seoul for this one. So I'll be there next week, and Andrew will be in the
Excellent. Seat. Yeah, we look forward to it. And, you know, since you mentioned your race calling career, then a couple of things have been circulated in addition to this piece, because I saw where Steve Asmussen's son Keith, when Steve won his 8,000th the other day with Lookin' at Lee, he put up the Lookin' at Lee picture alongside win number one. So win one through 8,000, and win number one, a horse by the name of Ours Alone, August 19th, 1984, at Manor Downs.
Unbelievable. Fantastic location.
I got a big kick out
Fantastic
of that.
Fantastic location.
Yeah,
you it's, see a it's a shame. It's a shame they don't race there anymore, because I must say it was one of the most interesting experiences of my racing career, having called the last season of races there. A lot of fun just outside of Austin. I mean, if you were in the grandstand at Manor Downs, you had no idea that you were about 8 miles from downtown Austin, Texas, but you were. And an awful lot of fun over those 15 days back in 2010.
Did Nick call a race at Manor?
Yeah. Nick called a whole day. He called a weekend, actually. It was Nick Tamaro's race calling debut, solo race calling debut. He came up from Houston to call one or two races, because they were running about 14 races on Saturday and then 14 on Sunday, and it was a combination of it was mixed breed. So you had the quarter horses for the first couple races, and thoroughbreds were interspersed. I mean, you might have had an Appaloosa and a paint race in the mix. Nick came up and called one or two, and then the following weekend he came up because I was off to Dubai. So Nick came up and called, and there was actually, you know, mentioning the Asmussen connection, the first winner sired by Giacomo was a horse that won at Manor. And it was trained, I want to say it was trained by Keith Asmussen in 2010. I'll try and find that real quick, but it was, because I remember sending Steve Haskin a message saying the first son of Giacomo to get in the winner's circle has just won at Maynard Downs, and needless to say, no one else was going to have found this one because it, you know, the races weren't being exported. There was no signal. Everything was on track.
Right.
And I'll still say that one of the craziest things ever was closing day at Maynard. The twin trifecta, yes, indeed, the twin trifecta, had carried over for the first, I don't know, 14 or 15 days of the meet, and it built up a pool of maybe about $20,000. So it was, they were forcing out the pool on the last day. No, it wasn't even that much, Steve. It must have been $12,000 or $13,000. And on the last day of the meet, they came and they bet $100,000 cash on track to claim the $10,000 or $12,000 that carried over the previous 15 days. And there was a disqualification in the last leg. A horse just ran straight across the track, got DQ'd from third. It took about 20 minutes to put it up and settle up and everything. Oh, it was fantastic. Good fun.
Well, today, this is, we've already, we're, it's not even 10 o'clock. In the first hour today, we've mentioned three historic facilities, Maynard Downs, Douglas Park, and Woodlawn. three. And Rockingham. Rockingham already today. So really, we got four tracks in the first hour that are historic footnotes.
And just for good measure, Green Mountain. There you go.
Right. Nice. And Berkshire Downs. Love it. Nick will undoubtedly hear about his the mention of his race calling career.
As he should. please, he'll regale you with the stories because Nick and his dad, I think his parents came up for the weekend. They made a weekend out of it. Beautiful Manor.
No doubt. Well, we will have to unearth some audio, too.
There's some on YouTube. I'll send you a link.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you. Pat Cummings, everybody. Have a good trip to South Korea. And
thanks.
Have a war ba for me. And we'll talk in 2 weeks.
Cheers. All the best. Bye-bye.
Pat Cummings, UK, everybody. And plus a tour through Maynard Downs. I love it. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. And actually, we're back on point. And so we'll get Lou Raffetto in here. And I mentioned Rockingham and I suppose Lincoln and Narragansett figure into this, and Suffolk, of course, because the passing of Charlie Asikomopoulos, New England Racing, an absolute stalwart for many, many years, family that is still very much involved in the game, and we will pay tribute with Lou Raffetto next, and in fact, Suffolk, not far away, weeks away, from the start of the season, four weekends coming, and we'll have Lou next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Hey folks, Eddie Olchek here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Maryland for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.